Bande Hum.
The following is the continuation of a lecture given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on June 16, 2001, in London.
Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha.
Some people think this work in India, but how will it work in the West? As far as I can see, it's a universal principle. It may work slightly different in the West than in India, but it will work anywhere where there are sincere devotees. Perhaps the congregation may not be so large with Western devotees as with Indian devotees, but the same principle could certainly be established. In fact, we were invited in Moscow and Ukraine to establish the counselor system and Mayapur. And at that time, I was much better prepared than now to give a presentation. And then we sent devotees to actually go there and help them to establish these systems. In Mayapur, I think they have over 300 brahmacharis there. And they're all working under the counselor system, the brahmacharis. And it's, from what I've heard, it's been quite helpful. In Moscow, we sent Devamrita Prabhu, one of our brahmacharis, to help establish it. And we've also sent one lady named Janava Devi to help to train the ladies. And according to Vaidyanath Prabhu and others, it's very, very helpful for both the brahmachari ashram and the congregation. And in Ukraine, we also sent some devotees to help establish the counselor system. And it's very, very helpful there also. They feel there's a lot of improvements in their caring for devotees through this help. So it can work anywhere. Just basic, common sense Krishna consciousness. How to serve Vaishnavas. How to inspire, appreciate, enliven, and empower Vaishnavas. How to maintain devotees' faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. And as leaders, we are responsible. As leaders, we have inherited from Srila Prabhupada the responsibility to make sure each and every special soul that comes to his movement will get the best they could possibly receive to perfect their lives, go back home, back to Godhead. Yes, Maharajji.
Thank you very much for this presentation. I have one experience from the Bhakti Sangha programs in several countries in Europe.
Mostly Switzerland, Germany, and some Sweden and Denmark. And the initial concept of Bhakti Sangha was also to nourish the spiritual life of the congregational members. What was lacking, so to say, was the magic to keep it fascinating on a long, enduring basis. And I'm yet thinking, with the background of this experience, what really happens in this counselor system, which maintains and inspires and fascinates and keeps, therefore, our devotees, not only keeps but helps them to advance. What is there in Bhakti Sangha? It became more or less, after they had discussed many subjects, then the only ongoing fascination was the prasadam, really, which came at the end. This is a This is my question. Could you please answer this? I also think it must be possible because Krishna consciousness certainly will be spread all over the world, but what will do this?
For that very reason, Maharaj, in our insignificant efforts, the counselor system faded practically into oblivion several times. Because the counselors just kind of didn't know what really they're going to say every 2 weeks. And they were preparing and doing nicely, but then people didn't seem to be very interested and they would stop coming. So, you know, why? Is this really necessary? Did Prabhupada ever tell us we should do this? That was a question. Our own devotees were asking, where in Prabhupada's books does it say that we should have counselor systems? Prabhupada talks about training devotees. Prabhupada talks about the ashrams, how a brahmachari, how a grihastha, how a vanaprastha, how sannyasi should be. Prabhupada talks about sadhu sangam. So this is just a implementation of that in a particular form. It's just taking very, very common principles that Prabhupada taught us and putting a form to it. That is why it's important that the counselors meet together to help stimulate each other to have exciting materials to present to their counselees whenever there's a meeting. Also, the counselors amongst themselves, they also conceive of various exciting, adventurous things for counselees to do. They go on retreats, they go on picnics, we go on pilgrimages to holy places. Leaders really would very much benefit their congregations if they think of exciting ways to bring happiness to the lives of devotees in a very, very Krishna conscious setting. Some counselors, they go to some holy place with their counselees, somewhere nearby. Or even if it's not a holy place, they just go to some place away from everything, and they just have a little festival of hearing and chanting and putting on dramas. It's exciting. And if we make the Sunday feast at the temple something very dynamic and something very wonderful, it's the time when all the counselors and all the counselees from all the different groups come together and just have an incredible family festival experience with the brahmacharis. So we have to tax our brains to think of exciting ways to present Krishna consciousness and keep interest during the counselor meetings, and as well as extra type of activities to further unite and excite devotees in Krishna consciousness. If we put our unified energies into thinking in this way, it's amazing how many creative ideas will come. Srila Prabhupada kept challenging devotees. He kept us on our feet. Whatever service we were doing, we were being challenged by Srila Prabhupada. So in various ways, and that challenge made Krishna consciousness a very exciting experience. Factually, Krishna consciousness is the most exciting adventure that anyone can possibly go through in life. It shouldn't just be dull, boring. I have to chant my rounds today. Somehow I have to get up for Mangalarti. Or for Grihasthas, I get my rounds done and I go to work. I come home. There should be adventure. There should be excitement. There should be enlivenment. We have all the materials in Krishna consciousness to create such an exhilarating culture. And as leaders, we should be really trying to work together to offer this type of atmosphere. like the six Goswamis, they taught how to celebrate festivals. So we could make, actually amongst our congregation, they make festivals practically out of anything. The festival is always centered around kirtan and hearing about Krishna and some sort of drama and prasad and maybe some other activity of appreciating someone, whatever. But festivals are a wonderful way to keep people very enlivened and surcharged and united. Different retreats. We have to do these for people if we want them to really feel the fulfillment in their devotional service. It's very important. And when the temple and the congregation are working together in unity, the congregation has certain realizations of what they need, and the temple has certain realizations of what they need. When they come together, so many wonderful projects, so many wonderful festivities, so many wonderful experiences can be created. Bhaktivedanta Manor is a retreat place. So many wonderful things that can be done here. What to speak of in the city of London. I think Shruti Dharma Prabhu was telling me that you brought some of your congregation down to Wales for some project, and how everyone was so happy and inspired and felt a greater and deeper commitment to our mission because of that experience. For the Western devotees, for the Indian body devotees, these things can be on a regular basis. The congregation leaders and the temple leaders are working together. Such an exciting experience could be constantly coming to all the devotees. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I really don't like to give these types of talks because I don't like to talk about, you know, what we've done and like that. Factually, in Radha Gopinath and Pune temples where they're following these systems, I really haven't done anything. I'm just like a cheerleader on the side saying, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. The devotees are doing all the work because they're all much more qualified than I am. But we also have our scandals, and we also have our crises and problems that come upon us. Nothing's perfect in Kali Yuga. We're trying to create Vaikuntha atmosphere, but every now and then these things creep in. The larger the congregation and the ashram becomes, the more you're prone toward people who deviate and create scandals and crises and everything else. We've had a few recently, but they shouldn't dishearten us. Because the strength of an organization in this world today, especially a spiritual organization, is not whether or not scandals and crises come in. Because they will. However well we try to train people, however meticulous we're trying to keep things very pure, still devotees have their free will. And sometimes they're going to do crazy and immoral things. And people are going to see that as a blemish on the temple itself. So the real strength of a spiritual organization is not that it's able to completely prevent these things from happening, but how it deals with them when they do happen. If we try to cover up, if we allow it to go on, then in due course of time, not only people from the outside, but people from the inside are going to lose faith in the integrity of our leadership. If we deal with problems, scandals, crises with integrity, with the highest principles of Krishna conscious morality, at the same time, compassion. then we're successful. Then people will actually gain faith by seeing how the leaders dealt with this scandal, rather than lose faith because the scandal took place. We must show, genuine and honestly, real spiritual integrity. If we want people to maintain their faith in our institution and our leadership. And we may not individually have much to do with this principle on a national or international level, but we have a tremendous amount of influence on our own local level. And I think our movement is really going to flourish when local leaders really take these types of responsibilities to give every person the best they could possibly get of Srila Prabhupada's mercy, to create a culture around them where they can flourish throughout their lives and lead with integrity. If many local devotees start thinking like this, then gradually the whole worldwide society will become glorious. It's already glorious, but it will be, the glory will be actually manifested through our lives. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you very much. That's a, you know, it's really words of wisdom that you've spoken here this morning, and most inspiring. But I have a question. When you started to talk, you started from 1987, a build-up to what you have in Tripati currently running. Now, do you have devotees who were previously in the congregation, active members, who had become inactive, and you have to bring them back and inspire them? And if you didn't have to do that, how did you go about it? Because, I mean, around here we have devotees from, you know, 1 year in the movement to 30 years in the movement, disgruntled, bitter, upset, you know, disappointed, and how would you go about inspiring devotees, older devotees, to come back? I mean, I can understand with these new devotees, and with the system running like you have, it's very inspiring to go because you can see a future for yourself. But for somebody who's from the past, I mean, it's very difficult to see a future for yourself coming back into a society that has failed you.
Perhaps if we were to make a serious endeavor to reach out with these programs, with these opportunities, and whoever comes forward to take advantage, maybe mostly the new people, maybe a few of the older devotees, but whoever is willing to participate, we give them the best we can give them. Then, what we have experience of is some of the people who are sarcastic, critical, don't have much faith. If they see that there's actually something good going on, their hearts may change. And some, and perhaps many, of their hearts will change. They'll actually see a way that they can be connected. They'll see a way that they can revive their own Krishna consciousness. So start with whoever is interested and enlivened to participate. Obviously, we can't change everyone immediately, but we could offer better care, better education, and a better spiritual environment to those people who want it, and who want it from us. And we give it to them, wholeheartedly. And leave the doors open to those persons who gradually, if they see that people are actually being enthused, actually being inspired, who are being revived in their devotional service, They see the Prabhupada's really in the center, in a dynamic way. That may be what they're waiting for. We don't know. So let's work with what we have and who we have to get things started. And then leave the rest to Krishna. But at least we know we're doing the best we can. Yes, we had devotees who thought the counselor system was an intrusion in their lives. They misunderstood what it was really to be. They thought somebody's going to be now lording it over me. I've had ISKCON authorities lording it over me long enough. I've escaped from that situation. I don't want some counselor to be telling me what to do and how to do it and criticizing me. The counselor's a friend. The counselor's a servant. The counselor's not an authority. But naturally, if you're being trained in that way by the counselor, he becomes an authority by your own free will. Yes?
Do the counselees select counselors, or how does a counselor counselee get together?
We have counselors that are really decided upon by the other counselors. At the beginning we had four, and gradually they would, from their counselees, they would train people to be assistant counselors and then become counselors. Essentially, people have a choice of who they want to be their counselor. It's recommended that people choose a counselor in their geographical area for practical reasons. When you go to the counselor's meeting, you don't have to drive 2 hours. It's close by. And the sangam of people that your fellow counselees are also living in the same area, so you can do a lot of things together. You could support each other. So that's usually how it works. It's geographical. However, if a person particularly wants a particular counselor somewhere else, and that counselor is enthused to help that devotee, then it's open. It's really the prospective counselee can choose, and then the counselor has to say yes. Sometimes the counselor doesn't want a person because he knows he's a burden. So the counselor has to accept the person also. But ultimately, it's the choice of the counselee. However, I would say 85%, this is a rough estimation, of the counselees have just graciously accepted their counselor when they were recommended to do so within their geographic area. And they're usually very satisfied. But maybe 15% wanted somebody in another area who they have more faith and trust, and it developed a relationship, so then that is accepted.
You described how counselor-counselee, if I use that term, it's sort of a vertical luck connection, someone who's giving and someone who's taking. Is there any systematic structure in terms of horizontal friendship interaction amongst devotees, or is that just happening spontaneously by the overall chemistry?
Some of the better counselors naturally create that type of an environment. It's simultaneously vertical and horizontal. They deal with their counselees like a friend. But the counselee naturally comes to that person as an authority.
I'm thinking about amongst the counselees.
Oh, amongst the counselees, yes, it's very much like that.
Is it structured or is it just happening naturally?
It happens naturally within the structure that's present. Because within the structure, it is horizontal. Because everyone comes together, including the counselor himself, as friends, to share Krishna consciousness with each other. That's how the meetings are. And that's how people are actually taught to relate to each other as servant of the servant of the servant. In one sense, the philosophy, it's always vertical. and we're always in the bottom. That's what servant of the servant of the servant means. And if everyone's thinking like that, then it becomes quite horizontal.
You answered one. I have one question that I had about it works because it's in India and you're dealing with individuals perhaps of a different nature, samskaras, culture. I understood your answer to that. There's also a different environment, albeit Bombay, which is certainly a big city, but it's still in India, and there's still a support environment which is quite well supported. Is that of any relevance, or how would you deal with the same type of thing in London, where everything is really not supportive towards Krishna consciousness, developing a Krishna conscious structure where everyone has to really defend themselves from outside forces which aren't really very supportive at all. Whereas you have, well, Prabhupada said it's a dead elephant, but it's still an elephant.
There's so many centers in India over the years. That are much more political scandalous and disunified than any of the temples in the West, would you say? So obviously the fact that it's India doesn't mean that it automatically people are going to be cultured and Krishna conscious, because some of our most uncultured devotees are centers in India. Yes? I don't think it's a matter of India or West. I think it's a matter of the leaders prioritizing. That's what will make it happen anywhere. The implementation may vary according to the country, Kaladesha Patra. But Vaishnavas are Vaishnavas, whether from the West or the East. Perhaps in India, it may be easier for people to accommodate more of the specific details of Vaishnav culture than in the Western world. But the principle that the program is based on, I think, could be as successful in the country in the West as in India. I really do. It's just a matter of the leaders prioritizing it and giving the people the best they can. Bombay is full of Maya. It's called Bollywood. When it was Bombay, it was called Bollywood. It's still called Bollywood, but they changed the name to Mumbai, so maybe it'll be Mollywood. But it's the sin city of India. I mean, if you look at what they call hoardings or the billboards in Bombay for the movie theaters, they're probably 10 times more grotesque and obscene than anything I see in the West. Yes? And they're everywhere. And they have satellite TV in millions of homes where the whole Western influence is just coming right into their living room. They have McDonald's restaurant. And some of the things that our college students tell us goes on amongst the college students in the universities in Bombay, it's abominable. It's not quite to the extent of some of the cities of the West, but it's making rapid progress. So it's a very materialistic culture. Really, I do believe that Vaishnavas are Vaishnavas anywhere, and Vaishnavas want Krishna consciousness. And if we can give them the best we can give them of Prabhupada, the best environment, they're going to flourish, and they're going to be unified, wherever it may be. Hungary is not in India. But from what I've heard, your temple is, your congregations are flourishing like anything with satisfied, happy devotees.
Who did you hear that from?
I've heard it from every single person who's ever been there. In fact, I feel ashamed to even talk about our temple in Bombay in front of you. I think that you've accomplished far more than we're attempting to do. I am eagerly waiting. But due to your humility, you're asking me to speak. I'm hardly a speck of dust on your feet compared to your accomplishments for Srila Prabhupada. But we see in Hungary how wonderful the preaching is developing on every level, because there's good education, good guidance, caring leadership. Hungary's not India.
Certainly isn't.
And in certain ways, Bombay isn't either. Because you're establishing things on Prabhupada's pure principles, things are growing. And I think that's the evidence that this is a universal principle. Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, I'm wondering if it's obligatory, two things. I'm wondering if it's obligatory for every member of the congregation to be part of the monitoring group.
No, it isn't. It never was and it never will be. At the beginning, most people didn't want to have anything to do with it. They thought it was just an imposition in their lives. But when they saw the people who were participating in it, very happy, very stable, flourishing so much, so enlivened, that gradually, practically everyone is participating now, just by the momentum of enthusiasm that it creates.
A further thing that much. I mean, it seems like Chakpati is a very singular, disciplic kind of mood. Whereas, I mean, how applicable would it be here to England, for example, which is very multidisciplinary?
I don't think it makes that much difference. I think what's most important is the local leadership. If the spiritual masters are interfering with it, then it will make things complicated. But I don't think that would happen. Within our congregation and within our brahmachari ashram, we have disciples of many of the spiritual masters of ISKCON. In our brahmachari ashram, we have disciples of Giriraj Swami, Suhotra Maharaj, Lokanath Maharaj, Jayadvaita Maharaj, several others. Within the congregation, disciples of Gopal Krishna Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj, I believe, Giriraj Maharaj, Romapad Maharaj, Bhakti Charu Maharaj, so many. And there's not really a conception so much that you're a guru, my guru. We're a family. We even have people from the Gaudiya Mats in our congregation, and even in our brahmachari ashram. But there's no canvassing, there's no judgmentalism. We just honor and respect each other, and it's just a loving family. So if the leaders of the local area try to create that fairness and that principle beyond sectarianism, then I don't think it should be a problem. In fact, we have disciples of gurus who are coming and asking, can we be a part of this? And in Pune, this system is just as successful as in Bombay. Pune, it's not at all in any semblance, a singular guru type of temple. Bombay isn't either. But maybe there's more people who come to a particular guru. But in Pune, there's about 15 different gurus that are initiating within the congregation in the temple. And the system works just as good there as in Bombay. Because the local leader is conducting it in a proper way. Does that answer your question? So I really don't think it makes much difference.
Marge, I was wondering if it's dependent on respect for the leader. In Chopa, to use the leader of it, and is it really dependent on, you know, for its smooth functioning, it must be dependent on having your respect, and you're the only person who's leading it there.
At the beginning, that may have been an element, because I was trying to establish it. So those who had some respect in what I was trying to do obviously took it seriously. But once it's established, respect for the counselors, respect for the local leaders, really is what sustains it. And that respect does grow. As I said, at a certain point, I just got off the field and became like a cheerleader. They're doing all the work. They're getting all the respect. I just say, go on, go on. Arrivo, arrivo. But if the leaders empower devotees to take the responsibility seriously, then they earn great respect and confidence. Does that answer your question?
It certainly does. One thing that comes to my mind is, like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes many Shiksha Gurus to take responsibility for many devotees. But what seems to have happened is we haven't encouraged the Shiksha relationship amongst each other. Instead, what has been emphasized over the years is the Diksha relationship more than the Shiksha. So even though in a small way the Shiksha relationships have gone on, but the Diksha relationship has dominated that and taken over what should have been emphasized, but has been scooped by the Diksha relationship of, you know, the initiating gurus.
But that could be balanced if we make proper efforts by empowering people to be respected as Shiksha gurus. I think that it's very important that the Diksha Gurus also encourage that. The people under their care learn to highly respect and honor those who are giving them Shiksha as the representatives of Srila Prabhupada in their lives.
Sometimes the term counseling it sounds a bit new agey to me. And people want to delve into their past lives or in this the childhood life in this lifetime. So would you be able to explain that, please?
According to the time, place, and people, we could use any name. Somehow, we were kind of in an isolated situation when we started it, and we just thought of the word counselor, and people didn't really know what a counselor was in India. So it ended up that a counselor was a person who's your friend, your guide, your servant, your helper to make your life and your family Krishna conscious. Teaching you how to worship the deity in the home, teaching you how to do your japa in the home, helping between husband and wife problems and misconceptions of the philosophy and the execution of the philosophy. It's strictly, purely on the basis of just helping people to become pure devotees of Krishna. That's all. So that's the way counselors are seen now. But if that word has different connotations in the context of this particular area, then use any word. Bhakta Briksha, Jaipatak Maharaj uses that word. That's also very nice. But we just used this word for so long, I guess we're too lazy to change it. And it works, so there's no reason to.
Okay, to ask another question on the same context.
Please.
I was wondering, is it okay to go and get a degree on counseling or whatever the case may be from outside? It can't be so, whatever the case may be.
If a devotee is very mature in Krishna consciousness and is actually and honestly able to utilize that knowledge in a very Krishna conscious way without compromising or polluting the philosophy with mundane ideas, then it could be helpful. It could certainly be a tool to be used in Krishna's service.
Thank you much.
The word counselor in America means different than in England. If you go to a summer camp as a youth in America, every group of kids has a counselor. The word counselor has never been used like that in England. So hence the, I see a little confusion.
You know, the context of counselors sort of gives like an emotional person. Specifically about points of disturbance rather than a positive.
You see, I'm essentially an uneducated person. And I'm kind of isolated from the realities around me for so many years. So I really don't know what a counselor means anywhere. My understanding is counselor means one who gives counsel.
Yes.
And there's spiritual counsel.
The word got hijacked.
So if we understand what is the role that such a person is to play, then we can give whatever name is suitable. I've been preparing myself for this question.
You need a counselor.
I need one just thinking about what he's about to ask. Psychologically, I've been preparing. How do you want, Prabhu?
First of all, a comment on this topic of the word counselor. It would seem to me sort of natural, considering what you've described as the service this counselor does, would seem to be to me natural to use the word that is traditional in our culture, which is Shiksha Guru, and then there won't be any confusion. And that's something that we read about in our books also. My questions are related to a couple of things that Shyama Sundar Prabhu said. You said that nobody in the congregation is obliged to be involved in this system, counseling system. But I'm wondering, but are they restricted if they don't involve themselves in it? Are they restricted from certain opportunities, in particular initiation, for example? And also, is there a different standard for the brahmacharis in the temple? Are they obliged to be involved in the system? And then, if not, the same question, are they restricted from other opportunities, in particular initiation?
Again, time, place, and circumstance. Within our brahmachari ashram, everyone is either a counselor or a counselee. But the counselor-counselee relationship in the brahmachari ashram, there's no authority. There's just caring, trying to understand where a person's at. At first we established the counselor system only for the congregation, because we thought there was no need in the brahmachari ashram, because everybody's so united in one place. But then we found that there were brahmacharis who were thinking that nobody cares about me, nobody likes me, and they felt isolated right in the ashram, and nobody even suspected that. So we were thinking nobody should have that experience. So we started the counselor system in the ashram, but it's simply like an older brother friend who just, you know, you could reveal your mind to, and who just knows, you know, how you're feeling, what your condition of Krishna consciousness is, and also giving guidance when you can, when you want someone to give guidance. So it is mandatory in the Brahmacharya ashram. For the congregation, it is not at all mandatory, but most people are enthused to do it when they see how nicely it works. As far as initiation, it depends on the particular spiritual master, of how that spiritual master wants their devotees to be trained before initiation. For myself, I simply am not spiritually advanced enough, nor do I have the energy to deal with everybody's lives on the levels that they may need somebody to help. And it's hard for me to take responsibility for someone on any level unless I feel that either myself or someone else is going to really be helping that person in spirit, in Krishna consciousness. So I've chosen that anyone who comes for initiation, before I render that service, they should be trained by a counselor. They should be recommended by the counselor with certain, you know, principles, standards. And then the counselor, besides the one counselor, he presents to the whole counselor board, and they have to all unanimously accept that person according to the standards that I've presented. But different spiritual masters, practically every spiritual master that initiates within our congregation or ashram, they like the system. They want the system, because they also don't have that much time to come and deal with all the individual personal problems and get letters. They want somebody to assist them. So far we found that practically every spiritual master wants their disciple or aspiring disciples to be trained and recommended by the counselor system. But there are exceptions. There are people who come to our temple, and if the spiritual master just wants the temple president to recommend, if the temple president feels he's good, he'll do that. But that's very rare, because most of our God brothers, they feel the system's very good for their disciples, and they encourage their disciples to be a part of it.
This one back to me.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your kind inspiration.
Thank you for tolerating me, Prabhu. I want to thank all of you for tolerating.
Tolerating the burden of love is the greatest goal of life. You said that something in your talk about sometimes it takes a match, you know, to light up a dynamite. That's what we want, right? You said that. There is a lot of potential within our yatra in England. I mean, from my own view, I've been for 15 years here, but there is something missing there, something which, like Shivram Maharaj said, you know, do we have any connection in terms of horizontal counselors? Like, it is nice, you know, to take up the position as a preacher or counselor, but it's also nice, you know, how to cooperate amongst ourselves first. And so in other words, it's like this dissolution in terms of relationships. I don't see much of unity. Like the other day I was talking to Sakyaras Prabhu, and very nice realization that he experienced. He said it's like when we all come together here, you know, we come for Guru Puja, we also sometimes we take prasada together, you know, congregation, brahmachari, everyone, leaders, bhaktas, but it's like we are like strangers living in the same house. So I was wondering, then made me thinking, what is that, you know, really creates this distance between us? And I came in conclusion, you know, that it's actually the familiarity, you know, that we become, you know, after we become too familiar with someone, then we tend to create an opinion about that person. And many times, you know, very often, you know, many of us, we feel like that, like you said, you know, the brahmacharis, sometimes they feel they are not very much liked. They don't even realize that, right? You said. So it's also for grihastha like that. So it's interesting, you know. I was trying to understand what, because everybody, you know, likes to be liked. Everybody likes to cooperate in the preaching, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. In other words, everybody likes to be wanted first, before, you know, we light up the dynamite. So how can we smash, you know, this impersonal element called familiarity? Because there are devotees, you know, I mean, I come to the temple, it's hard even to get an eyeball out of them, and I know them for 15 years. The other day I was giving a letter to someone for somebody else. Can you please give this letter to such and such? Said, oh Prabhu, I don't speak to that person, you know, for 5 years, you do it yourself. So I said, well, am I, you know, maybe I should, I don't know, maybe we should join in an impersonal institution, you know, we will be more successful. I don't understand, can you please give some light on this, how to smash this element of familiarity? In other words, how to learn, you know, to see and appreciate the devotees, even if we know the devotee for a long time, how to see him, you know, always refreshing in our association. And then it become, you know, it's like, just like when I was a new bhakta, everybody liked me. Because, the new broom, you know, sweeps better, you know, like that, you know. But then after some time, you know, of course, I've got defects in my heart. After some people, they get fed up. You know, I just like to be helped. Help everyone, I mean, you know, anybody who needs help. And in this way, you know, we should learn how to accept each other the way we are, straightforward. And then we light up the dynamite.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, that was the best part of the presentation.
It's not a presentation. It's a humble, because it said anybody who screams out, you know, feels the pinch. Yeah, it's an humble request. How to improve, you know, in our relationships.
In material consciousness, familiarity breeds contempt. But in spiritual consciousness, familiarity creates love and trust. We, as leaders, to try to create this love and trust through our preaching, through what we emphasize, and through our example. Preaching by example and words has a powerful effect of transforming people's hearts. This system that I'm discussing, what we found is it's human nature. Some people just like each other and some people just don't like each other. Whether the devotees or non-devotees, what can you do? However, if we create a format where we're working together as representatives of Srila Prabhupada, to help create a real spirit of bhakti of those who are subordinate to us, that creates a familiarity that is very spiritual based, and that could actually, as you say, smash all of the egoistic barriers between us, because we have a higher purpose to unite under, rather than these lower egoistic purposes in which we're disunited. Bhagavad Gita teaches, parandrispani vartate, we can only give up the lower state of consciousness by experiencing something higher. Our society and our culture should actually create a format by which we could unite under a higher principle and develop real relationships based on giving Krishna to others. If the leaders, by their preaching and by their example, are trying to create that energy a mood of service, a mood of humility, a mood of caring, a mood of attachment to sadhana, then people will be influenced. And if the leaders are united amongst themselves, it creates an environment where the people under their care become very united. I'll give an example. Every year we have this Pune Yatra, where for 4 days, usually over 1,000 devotees come to somebody's house in Pune, Krishna Chandra's house, and we just have 4 days of hearing and chanting. Big house. It's a big lawn, so they set up a pandal, and actually the people live at so many people's houses in Pune. He can provide for several hundred in his house, but the rest live in different houses.
It's money that makes the system work.
You could rent a place just as easy. Well, if a person's... Every temple, there's people around with money. If they're inspired, they give their money. If they're not, then they don't. Some people say, you have these grihasthas who support your temple so you can do all this preaching. But why do they support the temple? Because they're spiritually inspired by the Sangham, by the holy names. Money comes if people are inspired. Shivaram Maharaj, a poor country like Hungary, is building temples, community, because people are inspired. Trying to follow in his footsteps. But he inspires people by his qualities, by his enthusiasm, by his purity, inspires people to want to help. And they feel gratified, satisfied when they help. So it's very important. Oh, so this Pune Yatra, we have 4 days of just Mangal Arati usually lasts 3 hours. Srimad Bhagavatam usually lasts 2 to 4 hours. Sandhya Arati is usually about 2 or 3 hours. Because you have to fill up 4 days. No other service but hearing and chanting. The devotees are very happy. And so many of our God brothers have come over the years. So many. When Giriraj Maharaj was in good health, he would come every year. Jayadwaita Maharaj usually comes every year. Dhanadhar Maharaj has come. Lokanath Maharaj comes sometimes. Prahladananda Maharaj comes. So many. Sridhar Maharaj has come. The highlight of the festival practically every year is when the general devotees, who are disciples of so many different gurus, when they see the loving relationships demonstrated between their leaders, that moves their heart so much. I constantly hear that when we see how Giriraj Maharaj and Jayadwaita Maharaj and yourselves just have so much love and respect and intimacy with each other, we understand how we should treat each other. And they really try to do it, because that's the standard. As the leaders do, the common people will follow. So if as leaders, we're not just talking about Diksha Gurus, but we're talking about all leaders on every level who have people who are being cared for by you. If the leaders are united, if the leaders develop personal relationships, when people see that, that's the standard by which they will develop their relationships amongst themselves. It's very important. And how to develop those relationships with each other. If we have something very spiritual in Krishna consciousness, what makes our movement so spiritual? We're hearing and chanting together, and we're trying to share the mercy of Srila Prabhupada with others. That's preaching. If we come together to enliven each other in our own sadhana, in our own devotional practices, and coming together to try to help others, to preach to others, to be uplifted, then we can develop very, very intimate, loving relationships with each other. And that will have a powerful effect
on the whole congregation under us. Definitely. It's not something that can simply be intellectually understood. It has to be experienced. Because the Sangham, a Sangham united by bhakti, has a powerful effect on people's hearts beyond our minds or intelligence, ability to logically understand. And ultimately, in everything we do, we're completely depending on the spiritual principle of causeless mercy. And how to help that causeless mercy to descend upon ourselves and others. Without that faith in the causeless mercy of our parampara, nothing could be successful. We're just trying to somehow or other access that causeless mercy into our lives and the lives of others. That's the basic principle of the whole system we're talking about. Does that answer your question?
Yes,
Sakya
Hari Vol Prabhu.
Anyway, I'd just like to thank you so much
for the for your efforts, your sincere efforts to help the devotees. It's so rare and wonderful to be here and to see you trying so hard to help the devotees. My wife especially is very appreciative of your lectures and your presentations and the example that you're giving. I was thinking about this counselor. This word counselor is quite a problem. It's a lot of negative feelings towards this word in this country, unfortunately. But on the positive side, I'm remembering Lord Kapila Dev, his verse, Tadiksha Karunika, Suridam. Mm. So that word Suridam means well-wisher. And to me, a counselor means a well-wisher.
Exactly.
That's what I would consider a counselor to be, because over the years, although I'm not in the mainstream of the temple and I'm just struggling like mad to survive and remain as Krishna conscious as possible with my family, but many people come to my wife and myself from the temple. They phone up the house, Brahmacharinis, they ask my wife so many questions. My wife is giving this counseling. People, devotees, they ask me, here in the temple as a guest, as a visitor, I come, and they ask me various questions. There's families I've known for many years. They receive a kind of counseling from me. So, in a sense, I am a counselor. Although I'm not recognized, but I'm acting in that capacity, in a humble kind of way. So to me, it doesn't seem to be a very big thing. It just needs to be brought out. It seems to be already there. It just needs to be recognized and brought out. And then this contemptuous, this kind of a indifference, I think it's indifference that leads to contemptuous attitude. The indifference towards one another seems to be the root of the problem. That develops into contempt and hate. You can actually develop hate for someone, and it's all based on ignorance. So I just wanted to bring those points up, and I don't know if you'd like to say something about it.
What this type of system does is puts form and adds specific processes to what is already happening naturally. It's natural that junior devotees come to senior devotees for guidance and help.
It's the system of Krishna consciousness. It's parampara. So to expand that natural tendency in such a way that it reaches people and that people actually get the right help, we create a form and a particular setting within that form by which we can best perform this natural service of sharing with people what we've been given by Srila Prabhupada's mercy.
If you permit, I'll just tell the devotees that we're going to end at about 1 o'clock, which is coming nigh. What time is it now, sir?
It's about 2 or 3 minutes.
If anyone has any final question they'd like to ask, I very much appreciate our answers. Very nice presentation. Encouraging and enlightening. I think we'll continue on perhaps discussing it with National Council with the idea of perhaps you have devotees who are available to do more detailed training. You mentioned that was going on in Ukraine and Russia.
We have a policy. First thing is someone from the temple come to Bombay for some time and actually see for themselves how things are working. And then if they really feel that something like this would be good, and the leaders are unified with the commitment that they make it a priority, because it cannot work unless the leaders make it a priority. It's impossible. There's too many distractions. There's too many reasons for it to fail. The leaders have to commit themselves to make a priority. If that is there, then yes, we could send devotees to come and help.
Valuable information on the action side. Just want to go beyond the theory. One final question, Mataji.
Thank you,
Maharaj.
Hari Bol, Mataji.
Thank you. Can you tell me, from your experience, what is the sort of level of confidentiality between the counselors and the people that they're helping, and maybe between one counselor and another counsel? I mean, I imagine there may have been people who perhaps say they had a problem with a marriage that they wouldn't want anybody else to know about. But then later on, did they develop some kind of feeling that they didn't mind other people knowing, and maybe it was more help from a wider field? How did you find it worked?
A counselor should be mature. A counselor should have a good understanding of Krishna consciousness. A counselor should not be political in its propensities. A counselor should be mature enough to understand when something is confidential. Do not speak about it to others. There was one of them who think like that, he'll become pure Vaishnava. But as leaders, we shouldn't be thinking that let me inflict these situations on these devotees so that they can make advancement. It's our responsibility. One sannyasi was having certain problems. They consulted Srila Prabhupada. He kept it very discreet. But some other devotee spread it around publicly. And Prabhupada was very angry, not with the devotee that deviated, with the devotee who spread it. He said, you have ruined, you're making it impossible for him to come back to the association of devotees. So counselors should be mature. And if something is presented in a confidential way, we should keep it confidential and try to help that person. And usually when that happens, if the counselor really doesn't feel he has the ability to help that person, he asks the permission, can I consult some of the other counselors? And then he does that and gets help. In other words, we should do whatever is favorable to help that person. That is very important. Because ultimately, people make spiritual advancement according to their faith. As we have faith in senior devotees and leaders, more than anything else, that will really help our faith in Krishna. So we have to act in certain ways, that speak in certain ways with the goal of enriching that person's faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. And as if we're representing Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, then much of that person's faith is depending on how we behave and how we deal with them. That's a serious responsibility that Srila Prabhupada has given all of us in whatever leadership role we're taking, to encourage that faith, to encourage unity, to encourage purity, and most of all, to encourage people to really take shelter of the holy name. And they all work together. You can't separate one limb from the other, because people are human, and we want to help them perfect their human lives. Ultimately, we have to pray to Srila Prabhupada to empower us and help us to better be a servant of the servant of the servants of the Vaishnavas. Actually, our program in Bombay is full of faults and shortcomings. I tried to speak the good parts of it because that's what I was asked to do. But my prayer is, the way the world is in Kali Yuga, if we're not always on guard, no matter how nice something is, it can be crushed by Maya in seconds. So there's nothing that we can possibly be proud of. All we could do is just try our best to seek shelter of the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas, and try to serve the devotees the best we can. And factually, when I come to Bhaktivedanta Manor, I just see wonderful, wonderful people. It's such a wonderful project. And maybe we're seeing more than you're seeing if you're just seeing the faults and fighting amongst each other. Maybe somebody outside could actually see it better. What is the potential? What is the beauty? What is the glory of it? You have everything right here. Such a potential. So please pray for us that we can continue trying to serve the Vaishnavas in whatever way we can. And please just meditate on the gift Srila Prabhupada has given us and the infrastructure and facility that Prabhupada has given us and the incredible amounts of devotional service that devotees have performed here. And let's try to extract the essence, the goodness from that, and bring it together and make something wonderful for Srila Prabhupada's glory. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.